I would feel called to write about these memories and experiences and sort of integrate them emotionally. And I would follow that and I would write for 6-7 hours a day.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Christina Kemp is the author of Across the Distance, Reflections on Loving and Where We Did and Did Not Find Each Other, a memoir exploring her most significant relationships. It weaves poetic language and universal themes into compelling vignettes. Christina has a Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology and a private practice in Washington.
I'm here with Christina Kemp, and I'm excited because Christina just published a book. This was recently published, right? No, in February 2022, Across the Distance. And so you are an author and you're a poet and a psychologist.
Not a psychologist. I have a master's in counseling psychology.
So. Oh, okay, you have a master's. Okay, but you have a practice?
I do have a small counseling practice, yes.
Oh, counseling practice. Okay, great. So we have a lot to talk about. And I'm wondering, maybe you could start off with, how did you step into this role as author or writer?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the bulk of this book was actually written without my really knowing what it was for. And with regard to role as author or writer, similarly, I didn't tell anybody that I was writing for many, many, many years. Mm-hmm. So I was just sort of following this process. I would feel called to write about these memories and experiences and sort of integrate them emotionally. And I would follow that and I would write for 6-7 hours a day, mm-hmm. For years without just sort of these one-offs, not knowing what they were for. And then I knew somewhere in the periphery that I always wanted to write a book. And I began to slowly sort of come out of hiding and have really small conversations with a couple of trusted people. Oh yeah, you know, I'm writing and I think I want to put a book together. And I was connected with Cami Ostman, and I had about 70% of what ended up coming into the book put together at that point. And so I started talking with her and pretty quickly was able to sort of see a form of what was coming together. And then began doing revisions with 4 other writers and then had it finished maybe a year and a half later.
Okay. So this is all fairly recent then. This isn't something that started when you were like 6 years old or something.
No. Yeah. I mean, I wrote my first poem actually when I was 14, the year after my dad died, and it was published in an anthology on the East Coast. I have no idea which one, but I was so young and it was this really, really small sort of chime from the universe that I held on to. Yeah. And then I was writing in my 20s, a lot of my 20s for this. And then really started to put it together when I was in my early 30s.
So when you were doing this writing in your 20s, this was like nonfiction, memoirish type of stuff?
Yeah, I was writing about these experiences with these relationships that I had, mainly at that point in my 20s with my family. Uh-huh. You know, my father died when I was 13. I had a really tumultuous relationship with my mother. My younger brother, who I'm very close with, had an addiction problem when we were growing up. And so I was writing about mainly family and then started to bring in some other really formative relationships as time went on. A significant partner, a best friend, a mentor growing up. And so yeah, that was kind of, it was definitely memoir, nonfiction, poetic prose type of flow.
Yeah, that's right. Because the book Across the Distance, Reflections on Loving and Where We Did and Did Not Find Each Other, it's all based on your relationships with these people, your father, your mother, some of your past loves.
Yeah, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was it about, do you think, relationships that was so compelling to you?
I love relationships so much. Uh-huh. It's sort of my homeland. I mean, really, whatever the form is. My whole life, and I don't think it's just because of what I lost at such a young age, though I think that that's informative.
About the loss of your dad.
My dad, and then the collapse of my family following that. I mean, really, my mother was not able to function maternally. My brother receded into addiction. And so there wasn't just the loss of my dad, but really the collapse of a family structure at a very young age. Yeah. But I think, you know, not to locate all of my love and orientation for relationship in that, but it certainly influenced this understanding that time is short and we lose things and people really, really matter.
Right.
And so that's always been my orientation throughout my whole life. I mean, and it comes out in studying psychology and, you know, but I was never primarily career focused. I was always focused on these few relationships I had with these really deep, meaningful people.
Because you're also into spirituality, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely a deeply spiritual person. And so, you know, where spirituality or mysticism comes and meets us psychically and psychologically is definitely terrain that I feel like I'm always moving in.
Yeah. I feel like, you're very in tuned with connection, like just connecting things. And like, for example, this incident over here, this relationship is somehow related to this, which may not at first glance seem like they're related, but they are very much related.
Oh yeah. Everything. Yeah. There's just, I mean, we're this constellation of interconnectivity, and it's not to get too ambiguous or abstract with that. I mean, to really get in and discern the links between all of these different, and the way then that that's carried and stored in the body.
Yeah.
And our expressions metaphysically and symbolically in the world around us.
Yeah. I recently took this, it's like some type of assessment, a strength assessment.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I forget the name of the company, but Gallup or something. They're like popular for this assessment test. And I could not, my top strength was connection. And I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Right. And it said, like, you understand that everything is connected and you're good at connecting the dots. And I just thought that everyone did that. I just didn't even see that and I was talking to a friend and she's like, no, not everyone does that.
Yeah. It's funny when we confront that not everybody thinks exactly. I know. We take for granted.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and the spirituality really does play a part in that and how it affects your body. And yeah, it's just so fascinating to me how little things people overlook. Like if someone says something to you, or if you're having a relationship and you're constantly feeling an emotion and it's doing something to your body and you don't even realize, like you're not paying attention to the emotion and then how the emotion is affecting you physically, little things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And once you begin to become aware of that stuff in real time, it can be quite intense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
To regulate, you know, oh wow, this is coming up and it's stored back here. And now I have this muscle spasm and I'm aware of what that symbolically represents. And I'm here in the present with you. And I'm, you know, I mean, it's.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you're writing this book, was there one relationship that was particularly more difficult to write about than?
It's a great question. There's quite a bit of, there is quite a bit of trauma and harm. There's profound nurturance and healing in this as well. I mean, I was surprised actually to discover, I think I originally thought, you know, both my mom and my dad were difficult to write about in different ways. I didn't have help making meaning of the loss of him at a young age. And so there was a lot of grieving that was bypassed and that I haven't, and still to this day, continue to try to peel back and access for what it is. And the way that that shows up in the body, you know, there's a scene, a memory in the book. I was diagnosed with the same cancer he had in the same location when I was 25. Mm-hmm. And just the awareness of, you know, speaking about things, maybe metaphysically thinking about, oh, isn't it funny the way that unprocessed grief will show up in our lives?
Yeah.
But, you know, so there's that. And then there's my mother. And I kind of always thought that those would be the most difficult. But to be honest, I was really surprised that by the time I got to my brother's chapter, his was the most difficult for me to write.
Mm.
He's my younger brother. I think I've spent a lot of my adult life processing the loss and the experiences of my mother and father and my brother too, but not, I hadn't really honed in on him. And so he was a tough one, for me to get to. And then honestly, my chapter, I have a chapter at the end that's sort of mine arriving in this home that I live on, on an island. And that was tricky too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Christine, is your mom still living?
She is.
Okay. So your younger brother, how many brothers do you have?
I just have a younger.
Oh, just a younger brother. Okay. Were you close growing up?
Yeah, we were, and we still are. And I think that was part of what was so difficult is we had this really special bond as siblings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we lost our family and our family did not know how to deal with that. And the recession of him through so many years of my adolescence in my 20s was a really big loss. But, you know, there was so much to process.
And in examining these relationships, did you learn something surprising about yourself?
Oh, God. I mean, primarily what I'm discovering as I'm feeling through these experiences with others are ultimately aspects of myself. So, you know, I mean, often we like to focus on what's going on outside of us.
Yeah.
The other. And really, the other is there to illuminate what's going on.
Right.
Intrasubjectively. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much. And I mean, you'd almost have to pick a relationship because there's so much nuance and particularity. But certainly my drive to maintain relationship is something that I found. You know, my best friend in the book, we've been best friends for 27 years. That's a good chunk of time in a 37-year-old's life.
Yeah.
And a partner who I lived with, we are still, he's a chapter in the book. We're still very good friends. And we stayed living together when we were no longer lovers. And so what does it mean to allow relationships to transform and to follow them into whatever they're becoming and to stay in them and learn about where I needed to shift in order to remain in them? And I think that required and continues to this day to require a certain courtship with aloneness and with grief. And so that I can show up well and hold people with this sort of open hand, but not an indifferent or abandoning one either.
So as you were talking, a word popped up in my head, and it was codependency.
Uh-huh.
Did you, was that part of your experience? I mean, how do you define codependency?
Yeah. It's so funny. I don't know the textbook definition, but I tend to think of things, when I think of the paradigm of codependency, I think of leaving oneself in order to attend to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Or stepping away from oneself in order to locate themselves in another.
Right.
Okay. That is very, very different from having a deep understanding of self, mm-hmm. and being able to show up with someone with enough porousness to be impacted by them. And yet to not lose yourself and to not isolate. So, you know, I guess you sort of have this continuum between enmeshment and its twin, which is to isolate.
Right.
And they definitely coexist. And then in the middle, you have differentiation, mm-hmm. where you have two people together. So, certainly in my early years, in my late teens and early 20s, there was an awakening to that sort of codependent structure at a younger time in my life. That tendency to, out of hypervigilance and out of what was going on in the years that I was, developing, to just be very attuned to what's going on around me.
Right.
And so I started really, really coming home more and more, probably in my mid 20s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then learning the way that changes the dance in your relationships.
Right. Yeah. I was listening recently to an interview with, I think she is a psychologist or some type of guide or counselor or something. But she, like, her specialty is codependency, because she is codependent, a recovering codependent, I guess, that's what she calls herself. But she was talking about her relationship with her sister earlier in her life. I think they were in their 20s, and her sister was a drug addict, and how she would just abandon herself to save her sister. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think that she defined codependency very similarly to the way you're defining it, where you really do leave yourself, or you're so involved in someone else's life, but to your detriment. Mm-hmm. And she was explaining that, like, the most loving thing you can do for people is to just kind of let them go, which is very difficult.
Yes. And how do you, and maybe to expand on that, how do you let go without actually dropping them?
Yeah.
And so that brings me back to this courtship with grief.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to grieve the spaces between yourself and others, and the places where you can't find each other in various seasons? Because if we're willing to turn towards that, I think it allows us to remain in an open enough stance to stay in the relationship without needing to turn away.
Right. Yeah.
So how do I not grasp and reach? How do I not turn away?
Right. Yeah.
Ooh, tough. It's tough terrain, and it moves, it shifts, but really tough, particularly the more intimate you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you find that you were, as a young person, even today, is it easy for you to build relationships?
That's interesting. Most of my relationships, I'm a quality, not quantity person. I'm on the cusp of introverted, extroverted, but I'm definitely, I identify more introvertedly. I've had some deep, meaningful relationships with people that have spanned many, many seasons and many life transitions. And so I want to say yes, but it's not this huge quantity. It's like these few that I've very intentionally invested in, and there's a mutuality there.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes think as an adult, it's harder. It's fascinating. We are so conflict avoidant, and we really don't come to trust others until we move through conflict with them and we discover if it's safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I found that easier as a kid growing up. It was just part of the way that my friends and I interacted. It was like, you hurt my feelings, and well, you did this, and you'd have these, emotional blow-ups, and then you'd move through them.
Right.
But for whatever reason, I have found that forming adult relationships, not so much with romantic partners, but platonically, there's a lot of resistance. And so there is a degree of closeness that you don't get to. And there's a sadness in that. And I think there's a lot of relational dissolvement that goes on in our society right now.
Yeah.
We drop people very, very, very easily.
Yeah. I was, I know that as a young person, especially as a kid, I had like a lot of friends, and I was, I'm kind of introverted too, definitely more introverted than extroverted, but I can be extroverted when I need to be. And so I had a lot of people around me. And then, but as I grew older, and I mean like in my 30s, I began to want more meaningful, like that quantitative, So I became to be a little bit more discerning about who I entered into relationships with.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, it's just like what you were saying, like it limits, I don't want to say limits you, but when you're a little bit more discerning, you just don't have like the quantity decreased for me.
Oh yeah.
And it was a little sad, but at the same time, I was learning how to build that trust with people and not have such like a superficial, like, hey, how's it going type of relationship, but really being vulnerable and sharing and growing with people. That became a great asset for me as a person aging that I wish I would have had with people when I was younger. You know, I wish I really would have been able to be as vulnerable and kind of build trust.
Yeah. It's so much of our wounding originates in relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's also the antidote.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we have to do, I'm not saying at all, it begins with our inner work. I mean, there's no denying that. You have to be in relationship with yourself and all parts of yourself to be in relationship well with others and all parts of them. But it's not one or the other. And we can't just do a bunch of inner healing work through so many available modalities these days and say that it's done. Really, I think the testament is the way that we're able to move through various layers of vulnerability with others. And that has such a profound healing effect if we allow it to. Mm-hmm. And it's not about doing it perfectly and it's not about getting it right. You know, we're all clumsy and clunky in the way that we do things. And most people at this point have a fair degree of some sort of relational trauma. So the question is, can we trip up and mess up and still try to reach for some repair?
Yeah.
Still keep going. It's good stuff. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most people are really uncomfortable with it, but I love it.
That's the thing about like in building deeper relationships and friendships, you really do have to build a deeper relationship and friendship with yourself.
Oh my gosh.
That is the most challenging for me.
Totally.
You really do have to be radically honest with yourself.
Yep.
About how you feel and how you're responding and how your body's responding and tapping into your intuition. And sometimes that's very scary and very uncomfortable. And so that can be a hindrance sometimes in just getting close to people because you just don't want to feel all the feelings within yourself. Or because it's like you said earlier, we are mirrors of each other. Mm-hmm. And so if you're upset with someone because they're exhibiting some type of behavior, I mean, the first thing I do is ask myself, am I in any way exhibiting this behavior? Mm-hmm. Because usually they are just reflecting me and I have to get honest and say, okay, yeah, I can see how I am a little, I'm just making this up, like selfish at times or what. And so then that's a clue that that's where I need to do some healing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't want to heal that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And to always be considering that every unfolding is a dynamic between two people. I mean, your stuff is going to constellate my stuff and then it's going to come out a certain way and then it's going to impact your stuff. And it's this dynamic. And sometimes it's a mirror, other times, you know, it brings up other aspects of ourselves. And I absolutely agree. I think in order to do it well and to endure in staying in connection, we constantly have to be in connection with ourselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you ever get bored, quite frankly. You know, I mean, it's so fascinating. It's constantly deepening and unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good train.
Do you believe in a higher power? And do you have a relationship with a higher power?
Yes, absolutely. I'm very nuanced and sort of, I guess in a public sphere, kind of quiet about language or categories with it.
Uh-huh.
Not because I don't have them myself, but because language tends to take people away from feeling the experience of what we're describing.
Uh-huh.
And there's sort of some grief in that for me. So But yes, to your point, there's so much sacred within and around and above and below. And yeah, I mean, very, very much.
Uh-huh. And I, you know what? I also found that my relationship with nature has deepened.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I never thought I, you know, when you're younger, you don't really, well, maybe when you're a kid and because you're so curious, you do tend to see kind of the specialness of nature and, ooh, this is a really cool looking rock and let me climb this tree and let me, like, you're a little closer to it in that regard. But, you know, as a young person, it's like, I didn't care what type of tree was growing in my backyard, what type of plant this is, or how, you know, how this plant, how we were basically, I was talking to someone else a few months ago, or maybe last summer, and he was a meditation teacher. And he's like, we are always exchanging data with nature, right? Yeah. Like the trees, we breathe out, what is it? We breathe out oxygen and they make carbon, whatever.
Oh, yeah, the inverse. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just fascinating.
It's incredible. I'm similar. And I remember when I was publishing this book, it was terrifying for me as my cat opens the cabinet next to us, actually, speaking of not nature, but interspecies. And I was terrified publishing this book. And in certain cultures, you know, animals symbolize certain things and snake can symbolize transmutation. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming home one day from this walk and I was just trying to regulate this huge new experience of having my inner world, you know, coming out and transmuting into this outer reality of a book. And there's a snake sitting right in the center of my door. Mm. And I just remember being like,
wow,
you know, just like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, or being afraid of spiders and feeling like this experience was terrifying for me. And noticing a spider crawl on my, I start the morning sitting outside. Typically I either go swimming in the ocean or I go sit down on the grass and a spider crawled onto my leg. Mm-hmm. And to be sort of like, hey, like, thank you, fear, and whatever else you're trying to do here. You know, I mean, it's, yeah, there's a lot to receive from the natural world.
Yeah. You're a lot better than me. I would have freaked out. I have a thing with spiders.
It was a baby spider. It wasn't like a, you know.
Even a baby spider probably would have freaked me out. But yeah, no, I understand. That's so deep when you can connect on that type of level. Or just to understand that this snake on your doorstep or wherever it was, this is no coincidence, right?
No, totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And am I willing to be curious enough to see or hear or receive?
Yeah.
What's showing up?
So when it came time to publish this book, were you writing these I don't know, personal essays? What do you want to call them?
Yeah, I know. They're one-offs. I guess they're almost like vignettes in a way, because they're each standalone pieces. To be honest, I've been told that I sort of defy some of the genres because I'm constantly moving between things. So I sometimes don't even know.
Yeah.
But we can go with vignette.
Yeah, vignettes. So when you were writing these vignettes, you were writing with the intention of publishing them in a book, or were they just kind of like therapeutic or?
Yeah, not initially. I mean, in those, I think 60 to 70% of it in those early years, I was just writing. I just knew that I was supposed to write and I would just follow it. And write. Mm-hmm. Then because I knew I wanted to write a book, I started to look down and kind of see these pieces. And then I'm sort of a collage writer. I'm not very linear. Mm-hmm. So I had all of these different, you know, all of these relationships with these universal themes weaving through them. And I thought, okay, well, what if I sort of organize it this way? Oh, and look, there's a form that's coming together that could be a book.
Okay.
I think that there were probably, I think finishing my brother's piece, I knew it was going to be, because I hadn't finished his. So that I knew was going to be for the book. Mm-hmm. But the rest of them, the bulk of, and then my chapter hadn't been finished, but the rest of it had just been written, you know, just to write.
So when you had the idea to publish it and make these private writings public, how did that feel?
Yeah. I had this deep inner sort of peaceful knowing that I was supposed to do that. And so that there was, that anchored me. I was never uncertain of whether or not I was supposed to be doing this. And that held me as I moved through what was, you know, it took me 9 months from, the book was accepted for publication last June, and it just came out in February, which is the gestation, you know, it's a gestational, which I also think is beautiful. But those 9 months were extremely terrifying, disorienting. I mean, I really felt like I had this inner world that was, I'm really protective of the people that I write about. Even when there's harm involved that I've been on the receiving end of, I feel very, very protective about taking those experiences because they're complex and putting them out into the world. And so, and then also just the vulnerability of myself and putting myself out. And so it was the scariest thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I felt it in an embodied way too, like that transformation of like inner world that has been safe and sacred and in this space. And now suddenly it's coming out, and it was disorienting.
Were you concerned with what the people in your book would think?
Oh God. The beauty of the writing process initially was that, you know, I didn't know what it was for. So there's this freedom, and I was writing, I mean, just really authentically. And that remained, but as I started to realize that this was going to be a book and that it was going to be published, yes. I mean, to answer your question simply, it's a really, really big responsibility to write about other people. It doesn't matter what they've done. And, the bulk of these people are still living. And I know it feels vulnerable for me to put myself out there. I can't quite imagine what it feels like to be written about and have that put out into the world in many ways without your consent. You know, the bulk of the people in this book knew that I was writing it. I gave them their chapters so that we could create a space to have conversation and talk about the impact and anything that was coming up before it went, before I sent it out to publishers. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I wanted to tend as well as I could to these people while also being very clear that this was my honest lived experience and that I'm very clear that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm also not going to leave that either. So there's
a
in there.
Yeah. I was going to ask, but you just answered the question. Like, where's the balance between speaking your truth and not trying to do harm to, or, you know, upset people?
Yeah. And the harm piece is tricky because so much of that is subjective.
Yeah.
And then what the world chooses to do with art is also about the world.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, it's also my lived experience is just a little speck of truth on this large wheel of truth that none of us can fully get to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I've written, you know, people, I imagine my mother hasn't read it yet, but, you know, knowing her, I imagine she might have different opinions or even recollections.
What's been the reception so far from the people? Your mother hasn't read, but the other people in the book.
Yeah, you know, it's been deeply moving to receive their receptions, actually. Thematically, a lot of the people that have been formative in my life have been pretty avoidant. And so there's levels of loving and intimacy that we're not able to get to. I mean, that comes out in the title even, right? These places where we can't get to each other. And so I wrote instead. You know, I always offer things verbally, but writing was a way for me to live into that intimacy and that love, whether or not it could be received by them. And to have had them read the work and then to hear the way that it impacted them. I mean, it's been deeply loving and much more than I could have hoped for. So
So it definitely feels like it's been healing for you.
Yeah. I mean, and the writing itself is, I'm a verbal processor and I'm a physical processor, and I mean, really, really emotive. And so, that journey in and of itself was healing, but yeah. And
the relationships, did it heal the relationships?
I think it's not that it healed them. I imagine some of what I've offered in some of these, in my experiences of these relationships with people that I'm still in relationship with, I imagine that is something that will ripple out and unfold for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of a slowness actually in terms of what is the impact of that? And to be fair, the majority of the things that I wrote are not things that were never unspoken about in those relationships. You know, it wasn't like I skipped talking to them face to face and wrote about it as a way of communicating something. It was more like, oh, we can't get here verbally. Okay. So I'm going to continue trying to get to this by writing. Yeah. I don't know that I can answer. And it's still quite new. I mean, it's really only been out.
Right. Yeah. That's true too. Yeah. For a few months.
I'd have to ask them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting when you mentioned avoidant, because are you talking about like the attachment styles of people, how they have some.
Yeah. Yeah. We could look at it through an attachment lens. I mean, we all have avoidance and we're all of the attachment styles, when we get down to it. But yeah, if we were going to look at it through an attachment lens, there's a lot of avoidant attachment mm-hmm. in the relationships that I was formed around, mm-hmm. Which then speaks to my own early ambivalent attachment.
Right. Yeah.
Comes out.
Yeah. But it's really an interesting exercise to explore that through writing. I feel like that's a tool. Writing is such a powerful tool that unfortunately most people don't use because they have this belief that they probably learned in school that they're just not a good writer. But I think if you're in relationships where there's a lot of avoidance in any form, whether it's not, you're not talking to each other about something, or you don't see each other very often, whatever, that sometimes you just pick up a pen or open up a laptop and just explore your feelings around that.
Oh yeah.
Can be very therapeutic.
Yeah, I think that there's this interest. I was having a conversation about this the other day with a good friend of mine who's also a therapist. There's this interesting, sometimes I think guarding begets guarding and openness begets openness. And sometimes when we have an experience of being in relationship with somebody who is dismissive or avoidant, we simultaneously think that we need to dismiss ourselves as well.
Yeah.
And it has this, you know, this sort of domino effect. And to kind of circle around and say, okay, so this person at this point isn't available for this. So then where do I take this? Because whatever's there needs to be discharged.
Right.
Needs to be honored and engaged. And so, yeah, to your point, I mean, writing is a fabulous way to create a container of meaning around what you can't get to relationally at that point in time.
Yeah. Because I think for myself, I would experience avoidance as rejection.
Oh God, it's deeply, I can resonate. I mean, it's deeply. And then the messages that we internalize about that.
Right. Yes.
That we personalize about it. I would say that's definitely one of my, in core wounding land for me. And yeah. And it often, it's not that simple at all in the reality of the bigger picture. And yet that's such the lived experience. And so sometimes, and so to, you got to be with that.
Yeah.
In a way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have a writing / meditation / self-care practice?
Oh, awesome. That's a great question. I'm like, oh, but it moves around all day. It goes from this to this to this. And so where do I even start? Yeah. I mean, so the short answer is yeah. That's like the rhythm of my life. Right. Let me see if I can try to, it's not the same every day at all, but I typically, I mean, I, I wake up naturally in the morning with the light and the birds, and then I find my way into some sort of spiritual embodied movement. So lately it's been, like I said, either swimming out in the Puget Sound or being out on the grass and doing mudras or praying. But that'll often then move in and open something and move into dance or movement. And then I'll sort of begin moving that way, which will then open something that I will go move and translate onto the page mm-hmm. and reflect on and journal that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that they're so interwoven.
Yeah.
And, but yes. And writing, I mean, I have a bookcase full of journals. I've been writing since actually wrote about it in the book. My eighth grade biology teacher, after my dad died, gave me my first journal. Mm. And, you know, I've been writing since then. So,
wow.
Yeah.
From a teacher. Wow, that's great.
A biology teacher, you know.
A biology teacher at all age. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if something in her spirit knew.
That's wonderful. That. That's a wonderful story. Christina, this has been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
Tell us where we can find you.
Oh, like online. Is that what we're?
Yeah.
I have my practice website is healingengagement.com. Mm-hmm. I have an author website, ChristinaAnnWriting.com, and an Instagram account, ChristinaAnn_writing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can find me there.
And I'll give you this opportunity, if you have any like final words of wisdom or encouragement for someone who is writing these personal narratives. And they're considering publishing, but they're apprehensive about putting that out. They're kind of stuck in that space of like, oh my gosh, do I want to share this?
Yeah. I think to just honor the fullness of our experience, all shades of it. Mm-hmm. And then as we do that, to come into a place of landing and discerning where it's time for us to step toward possibly, right, publishing and exposing, or where it's time to harbor and respect our boundary. Mm-hmm. Both are necessary in different seasons. And so it's just really being integrous to what's really going on with us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, do it, you know, like absolutely Put it out there if it's available.
Thank you, Christina. I'm just going to stop recording, but I'll just chat with you for a moment.
What an insightful conversation with Christina. If you'd like to learn more about her and her book, then please visit her website and order her book. Better yet, once you order it, read the book. That would be even better. In the meantime, you can sign up for my newsletter at zazo.com, and you can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Ebony Haywood, and Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and I look forward to next time when I talk to another fabulous guest. Bye-bye.